World Famous Phil Henry Show here at the El Pacifico. Good to have you guys with us here tonight. Robert Leonard with us, Bud Dickman, Margaret Gray. We're here till 10 o'clock every night, Pacific Standard Time, 1 a.m. on the East Coast, and we're with you tonight as well. Just right off the top here, I saw this story that we did yesterday, last night I should say, that I found to be rather interesting because I had seen this exhibit, you know, when it came to Los Angeles.
Now, that's that thing I called, it's called the Coon Today.
It's not, it's called Entartete Kunst, am I right?
Entartete Kunst, which is German for degenerate art. And it was a display that the Nazis put on in the late 30s to show the German people an example of what was un-German, very degenerate, very disgusting, despicable art. Well, naturally, it was some of the finest art that Germany had ever produced. It was Otto Dix, Max Beckmann. These were some of the great, truly some of the cutting-edge artists of the day in Europe. And these are people that fled Germany, as so many other artists did, to get away from the Nazis. And this display, years and years and years later, was reconstituted, if you will. It was put back together again, and it went back on tour here in the United States and elsewhere so that the rest of us could see this. And what the irony of the whole thing, and really the humor of it, was that it's called degenerate art, but it's actually fantastic, beautiful, modern, amazing work. And I was fortunate enough to, well, I don't know if I'm fortunate enough. I mean...
Well, all you did was get in your car and drive.
Yeah.
That's not exactly being fortunate unless you're fortunate to have a car.
Right. That's why I didn't think I was fortunate enough. I was...
You're fortunate enough to have an alarm clock.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't call that being fortunate, having an alarm clock. I can buy one of those.
Well, you're fortunate to be alive.
Yeah, I'm fortunate to be alive so that I could have an alarm clock in a car to get into the car to drive. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. Why are you making an issue out of it?
I'm just saying I was fortunate enough or I was smart enough. It just sounds rather...
It's like a little egotism.
Yeah, it sounds kind of egotistical. Gee, I was smart enough to go see. But anyway, I went and saw it. Let's just put it this way. I was really interested in seeing it, and I did. And now, folks, the reason why I'm mentioning this to you, a very interesting thing has happened in Germany. There's an old guy in Munich, some old man, that has an apartment there that the Bavarian police, that's the state of Bavaria, which is a part of Germany, as you know, the Bavarian police raided this guy's apartment 2 years ago. And from that raid, they confiscated various pieces of this confiscated art that had not yet been returned to its rightful owners. Now, at the end of World War II, the United States Army and the armies of other allied countries had, in the U.S. Army, it was called the Monuments Division. And these were guys that went in behind the troops, and they were looking for things like this, confiscated or stolen or hidden art. What had the Nazis done with this? This is stuff that belongs to the world. I mean, it was taken out of museums. It was taken out of homes. It was taken from, you know, the owners of this artwork. So, you know, literally, the victorious powers at the end of World War II were looking for all this stuff. Some of it was hidden by the Nazis in tunnels. Some of it had been confiscated by the higher-up officers of the government. This guy, Hermann Göring, had stolen it and put it into a railroad car. And that was hidden someplace. So they had to find all this, and they were pretty successful in doing it. They found a lot of it and eventually returned it to the rightful owners, except in the case of the Russians, who had such a major, you know, issue. Well, and who can blame them? They had such a major issue with Germany. They said, well, you know what? I think we're just going to keep it. So how do you feel about that? Yeah, you have to. Well, that's too bad. We're keeping it. We're putting it in our museums, and now we're going to call it ours. And that's just how that went. But anyway.
Well, was it German art?
Well, it was just confiscated. It was just art that the Russians had found, that the Germans had stolen. So anyway, 2 years ago, the Bavarian police raided this guy's apartment. He's some old guy, as it turns out, was the son, the old guy who had the apartment. We had his name last night, and I'm looking for it in the story. He was the son of the guy who was in charge of confiscating, stealing, if you will, this art for the Nazis. This guy took this art and hid it. He didn't turn it over to the Allies. He didn't turn it over to the countries that that had won the war and that wanted to, you know, account for this lost art and return it to where it belonged. He held on to it. And when the German police went into his apartment, they found, folks, this is a staggering amount, $1.4 billion $1.4 billion worth of art. This old guy was selling this stuff, man.
Yeah, this guy's selling off every time he needs some money or something. But like having, like a retirement fund.
Well, he's a billionaire. If they never found he's a billionaire.
Yes, he's a billionaire. This guy's a billionaire. And obviously he was living real low-key, real, down low, whatever, and nobody would have mistaken this guy for a multimillionaire. But the guy has got $1.4 billion. The artwork is from, and I saw this, the exhibit, and it's amazing stuff. It's surreal. It's modern. It's some of it is very ahead of its time. Otto Dix, one of the great surreal artists who came out of Germany in the early 20th century. Ernest Kirchner, Max Beckmann, Mark Chagall, if you don't know that name. Mark Chagall was a Russian. Who spent time in Germany, whose art was eventually... This is actually Mark Chagall, the Russian painter, was actually... maybe he was living in Russia at the time of the Soviet Union. Other artists were Courbet, Renoir, Toulouse-Lautrec. We're talking about some amazing stuff. The Oxford State prosecutor, Reinhard Nemitz, confirmed the hoard was found by chance, arising from a money-laundering spot check on a guy by the name of Cornelius Gerlitt, who's 79 years of age... And it was on a train from Zurich to Munich in September of 2010. After a background check on this guy, Gerlitt, they raided his, quote, squalid Munich apartment in February 2012, not 2011, as reported by Germany's Focus magazine. It took 3 days to remove 1,400 paintings, sketches, and lithographs hoarded by this guy, Gerlitz, and collected by his father, Hildebrand Gerlitt, who was charged to find international buyers for art dubbed degenerate by the Nazis. So get a load of this. The Nazis steal this stuff, call it degenerate, and decide they'll sell it off to fund their little projects, whatever the hell those are.
Yeah, like dropping bombs on people and stuff.
Yeah, killing people.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's...
Well, they did a lot of different things to earn. They had slave labor in Germany and everything.
You mean they didn't pay nobody?
No, they didn't pay nobody. You got that right. About 120 works were in frames and stored on a shelf, while the rest were unframed and stacked in drawers. They're now being stored at an undisclosed location. Bavarian authorities said yesterday they did not know where Gerlitt was now. We have no context. It's not... See, one of the things that the press is trying to figure out, and the police are going to have to answer for, where is this guy?
What do you mean?
They can't find him.
What do you mean they can't find the guy? Stole it.
Yeah, they did not keep track of this guy. What kind of a police effort is that? Oh, look at this. You have $1.4 billion. Where's the guy? Maybe he took off. Maybe he's a fugitive. Maybe he wasn't home when they raided the apartment. I don't know. Maybe he's dead. Maybe he's in one of these drawers.
Yeah, maybe they'll pull him out of the drawer, man, try to hang him on the wall. Get the audio.
Anyway, we have no contacts, as said Mr. Nemitz, who's the Augsburg prosecutor, adding that they did not have enough information yet for an arrest warrant. Well... Oh, is that you're still putting together the information from the arrest warrant? Meanwhile, what you guys ought to do is maybe stake somebody out, anybody, and find out where this guy is. Restitution experts criticized the Bavarian handling of the case, no kidding, in particular the 19-month gap between the raid and the press conference. It's extraordinary that we're only finding out about this now, said Peter Schenk, a Berlin lawyer who regrets his name,
Let me see that.
No kidding. You have to grab that.
Too bad his name ain't Schenk.
Peter Schrenk, a Berlin psychiatrist. Yeah, that'd be good. Anyway,
Isn't that cute? Would you just read the story?
I'm reading it. He said, we have to find a possibility for concerned parties to check if any of the pictures found in Munich were once owned by their families and to give them possibly some legal recourse. There it is. That's interesting. We'll get back to more of that. And Ron Tarn is going to be with us. We also have Rudy Canoza on the show tonight to discuss some of these election returns that have been pouring in. The re-election of Chris Christie in New Jersey, and if you heard that, he is now...
That's the fat guy, right?
Yeah, bud, that's the fat guy. I mean...
You can call him the fat guy, man.
Well... Yes, it's the big guy. He got re-elected, and they're predicting, I think they've projected that McAuliffe is the winner in Virginia. But we'll have all of that for you and more when we return here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show on this Tuesday night. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. And don't forget, I'm going to be at the San Francisco Sketch Fest the end of January and guesting on A Drunk History on Comedy Central coming very, very soon. We'll have details on all of that for you. World famous Phil Henry Show. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. If you're a Backstage Pass member, then you get access to our video cast every night of this show, and you would have had access to last Saturday's bonus show, in which I was doing tequila shots, Utica Club beer.
Hey, that's pretty bitch. Very happy on that.
Yeah, the guys that sent me the Utica Club were very happy.
Now, who are these guys?
Elliot Haas and some buddies of his from upstate New York who are now living in the Los Angeles area. And
I'm calling Los Angeles. People don't think you don't know how to talk good.
Well, isn't that just too bad? I don't care. I mean, I'm joking around when I say Los Angeles. Although there's a lot of people say Los Angeles, you know.
Well, it sounds hillbilly. And as I've said to you before, there's a lot of people who write me emails and they think you've gone Billy. So
yeah, you're going to go Billy on them.
What do you mean going Billy? I'm just joking around. Anyway, now I forgot what I was going to say. You guys are pissing me off when you butt in like that.
You talk about Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Robert. On Saturday, we did... I was almost like warming up for Drunk History. And Derek Waters, the producer of the show, sent me an email today. Said, very good. Very nice. I loved it. I watched Saturday. Very good. You were really slamming those tequila shots, and you had your stuff together.
Now, what did you talk about?
I did three topics. I did, I can't remember, but I know, no, I'm just kidding. I do remember. Lincoln, the Lincoln Assassination Commission, William Bly's logbook, and Operation Barbarossa, which was Germany's invasion of Russia. And as I said before the show, you know, because I got an email, not an email, I got a Facebook message from this former fan who was really angry at me because of some political point of view that I have. And he was going on about how I'm some kind of a 60s hippie and this and that. And, you know, the guy couldn't be more wrong, but nonetheless, that's what he said. So I fired back, well, you're just a Tea Party, you know, scumbag, something like that. And he got all upset. I'm a Tea Party. So I'm thinking, well, if you don't want to be, you know, lumped into one big ugly category, don't do it to other people. And the guy had sent me a return message saying, well, I had been drinking when I sent you that original message.
He'd been drinking?
Yes, he'd been drinking. And I thought, well, that's no excuse. If you can't hold your liquor to the point where you don't know, you know, you don't mean what you say when you've been drinking, or you're saying things that are... I consider that to be, and maybe I'm... You know, maybe I'm a little hard ass about it, but I don't think if you are saying things you don't mean after you drink, if you're doing anything that you don't think you should have done after you've been drinking, I think you got a drinking problem, personally.
Well, I think that's a little bit harsh. Are you saying that everyone, you know, Phil, we had a cocktail party at our home a couple of years ago, and I remember I got into the pool and I wound up, I'm trying to remember if I took my bottom off. I took the bikini bottom off. And I auctioned it off.
What? That's really gross.
Excuse me. Does he have to talk?
Easy. You auctioned off your bikini bottom.
Not my bikini. Yes, the bikini bottom. Auctioned it off. Top dollar.
How did you do that? You were in the pool?
Yes, I was in the pool. I said, here, Frank. And I threw it to him. Now I'm nude from the waist down. The next morning I woke up. And I have to tell you, I didn't stop vomiting until after lunch.
Okay, hold it. So we don't have to hear that part, all right?
Well, I'm just giving you... I wasn't really clear on what I'd done. I was full of regret and doubt. I must have even considered taking an overdose of pills. And yet...
Are you kidding?
No, I'm sort of kidding, but I was full of regret and doubt... And yet, I don't think I'm an alcoholic.
What? You?
Excuse me, I'm not talking to you, Junior.
Well, Margaret, if you did something like auction off your bikini bottom and the next day you didn't stop throwing up till after lunch and you were full of doubt and regret to the point where you thought of overdosing on pills and you don't think you have a drinking problem...
No, I don't think. I don't.
Well, I mean, that's my opinion anyway, and... Because the reason I said that is after what we did on Saturday, I was 3 hours on the video cast on Saturday talking about all this stuff, doing shots of Don Julio Añejo and knocking back Utica Club beers, and there ain't anything that I said on that show on Saturday that I want to take back, that I regret, that I don't remember saying, or that I have doubts about saying, or have, you know, problems with saying. I'm fine with everything I did.
Well, isn't that great, Phil? I was at a party. I was drinking vodka. It was a long day.
All right. Well, I'm not saying I'm a better person than you. I'm just saying if I were you, I'd look into some of that stuff. All right. I want to talk with Dean Wheeler. Dean is at the Grove in the East Bay of San Francisco tonight. His wife, Emerelda, is appearing there doing a set of her songs. You know, I don't know, they're Emerelda's new, if the CD is out yet, Dean, or not. But it's good to have you on the line with us. How are things tonight?
Well, Phil, it's going pretty good, and Emerelda's going to be on stage here in a moment. We have started the CD sales on CD Baby, and we also are doing sales of our CD on a couple of other file-sharing sites. So we think that we're going to do far better than were we to be with the record company and have them steal most of the profits and behave inappropriately with my wife, you know.
Well, is that how you feel a record company would deal with her?
Yeah, Dean, this is Margaret. Isn't that a little bit a contentious viewpoint?
I don't think so, Margaret. I think you're in the entertainment business. You've been writing about it. We went into these record companies. I went in with the very best of intentions. I was on my best behavior. I was affable. I was personable. I picked up. I don't know how many lunch tabs I picked up. We were into our savings one month because I had bought so many lunches for so many record company executives. I've been replacing the horn player in her band one a week for the last 6 months.
What is it with the horn player in that group? I don't understand the problem you're having.
It is a moral. It's a moral issue, Phil. It's got nothing to do with the way the guy plays, although I'm not a big fan of the way these guys play trumpet like it's like they're pouring syrup on pancakes. It's just too loose and too oozy. Okay?
What do you mean oozy?
As in the machine gun?
No, not the machine gun. As in
syrup.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it oozes down.
Well, yeah, it, not that it oozes down, but yeah, it, you know.
All right, okay, fine.
But when you say, all right, okay, fine, it's like you want to blow past what I'm saying. These are things that I feel.
All right, I want to get to this whole idea of your relationship with the record companies. You say you went into your savings one month.
Yeah, I was buying lunches. I was buying dinners. We were out, you know, taking, you know, people out. I don't know why I'm so shaky tonight. We were taking A&R guys to dinner and having private, you know, rehearsals, private, what do you call them? Oh, gosh, I forget what they're called now, but when you have a private show on a stage.
A showcase.
Yeah, I guess it's a showcase, but long story short, none of it did any good. And I would, we'd go to parties, I would bring gifts for their kids. One of the guys that runs a record company over here in Santa Monica, I brought his kids stuffed toys, a train set. I even helped with the payment first month of his kid's car, his teenage son, you know.
You're kidding. Dean, that is way over the top. You shouldn't even be going there. You shouldn't do that. You know, that's completely unnecessary.
Dean, I think a lot of those people might even think of that as being a little intrusive and a little much.
What people?
The people that you're doing that for. If you're spending money on the first month's payment of someone's teenager's car, I don't know.
It would have been nice to hear this. See, you're telling me what? You're saying...
I'm saying that people are going to see that as a little bit too friendly, like you are trying to buy their favor, you know?
Well, no, I don't know, and I don't... when has it ever been bad to be nice to people? But the bottom line is...
Yeah, what did it get you?
You're right, it didn't get me anything. It didn't get us anything, and we're still playing places like this, the Grove, which is a nice bar, and it's a cabaret, but it's a step way, way down from where we started in San Francisco 6 months ago when we were over at Bloom's and places like that, you know, where we were treated like royalty, and now we're in this dump, you know?
Dean, to me it sounds like you're a little bit despondent, and I we'll get it off of music here if you don't mind and talk about politics.
That would be fine, Phil.
Okay, great. And we'll do that. What I'm going to do is let you take a break here, Dean, and maybe get a glass of water. So he sounds like he's shaking, bud, so you might want to ask him if he's okay.
Yeah, hold on. Hey, Dean, are you doing it?
When we get into the commercial break, if you don't mind, okay?
Sorry.
Why does he always have to tell you that?
What?
Why does he always have to tell you that?
What?
Never mind. Why am I always telling you, bud, not to say this stuff on the bloody air, you know?
What?
You know something? You're deaf.
Take it easy. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Enemy Show. We got Dean Wheeler hanging with us here from the Grove there in the East Bay of San Francisco. We're going to talk about Chris Christie and all those guys that won and the guys that lost, too. Welcome to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. This is a highly dignified song. I think, in fact, what you're hearing is the music that is introducing Governor Christie now to the crowd. Hey.
No, it is not. No,
I'm just kidding. Cuccinelli is giving his concession speech. He's looking bummed out, and he's probably thinking, man, that guy Jackson, he did it to me, and when I get off this bandstand here, and when I get off this dais, I'm going to go find Jackson, and I'm going to strangle the life out of him. Thank you.
That's a terrible thought, Phil, even though I don't agree with Cuccinelli or whatever is Cuccinelli. The thought that he would find his lieutenant governor running mate and strangle the life out of him, I think, it's not even close to funny.
Okay, Margaret, thank you. We'll take that under advisement. I wasn't looking for a big belly laugh. I just thought I'd...
You thought you'd what? Bring in the idea of a strangler into the Virginia governor's race? Here's what I think of that.
How did I know you were going to do that?
Yeah, that's not even original no more.
Oh, well, thank you.
Boy, that's very hostile, Margaret. Anyway, Chris Christie is the winner in Jersey, and Terry McAuliffe is the winner in Virginia. The guy that we're talking about, Cuccinelli, his running mate, this guy E.W. Jackson, this guy is strictly a mental case. I'm telling you right now, I mean, ask anybody. Ask a Republican. Ask Republicans what they thought of this guy. He was way, way out there. Anyway... Dean Wheeler coming on the line here from the Grove in the East Bay of San Francisco. As we're talking to Dean, his wife is on stage there performing this evening and singing. And Dean, I do wish you all the best with Emerald's career. I think I think she's got great potential, and I know that it's just a tough business.
Well, we've got our fingers crossed, Phil, and we're hoping for the best here as the new. Season approaches, because most of the live money, most of the live shows people spend their money on between the months of October and April, we find. So we're getting right into the wheelhouse of that, and hopefully we're going to, and she's on stage right now, so if I lower my voice.
All right, so let's talk about the political race here. Chris Christie winning in New Jersey, a Republican, but a moderate Republican, a man who is... was the object of a great deal of ridicule. People castigated his efforts on behalf of his state because he was seen sort of glad-handing and working with President Obama.
Well, it just goes to show you the small minds they have there on the Republican side of things. How can you be such a pea brain that you can't recognize that this is what a man has to do to be a great leader? You have to sometimes reach out and shake hands with the guy across the street. And that's what I think this man, Chris Christie, did. And I think that more of our leaders should do that. The problem that we have with Christie, that I think is all Democrats we would have, he doesn't present the best physical example of a leader. And as a liberal Democrat, and I am a progressive Democrat, and I make no apologies for that, I believe in keeping physically fit and bringing into my body only those things that are whole grains, nuts, fruits, berries, things that do not have any genetic mutation or modification. I don't drink any milk per se, use any dairy products, although I'm not putting that down. And I think a big fat man like Chris Christie probably gives the example of someone who pumps an awful lot of that milk fat into his system. So that tells us something. The fact that the New Jersey State Police wear hats that are very reminiscent of the SS in Germany. You were just talking about the Germans. I'm looking at a New Jersey State officer right now. He's wearing a hat that's pulled his eyes.
What does all of this have to do with... Where are you going with this?
Yeah, what does this mean?
What does it mean? It means I'm sorry.
Are you distracted by Emeralda singing?
I am. I lost track of what I was saying.
You don't even know what you were saying.
No, I'm sorry.
Have you been drinking?
Have I been what?
Have you been drinking?
Yes, I've been drinking.
Okay, this is exactly what I was just talking about, folks. This is exactly what I was just talking about.
Well, don't talk about me like I'm not here.
No, I'm not. I'm going to talk to you. But here is Dean. He's been drinking tonight. He's worried about his wife's career. And he's supposed to be commenting on Chris Christie. And he gets into a rap about dairy fat and the fact that the New Jersey State Patrol wear their hats too far down over their eyes so they look like SS.
Is that what I said?
Yeah, that's exactly. And you don't remember saying it.
I'm sorry.
Dean, I don't know if this is going to be any good to talk to you tonight as long as you're sweating Emeralda on stage. Is she doing that poorly?
Well, the place we're in is a real toilet bowl. I just don't... I had big hopes.
Okay, you know, snap out of it, Dean, because you said you could come on and talk about this.
I'm on. I'm talking about it, okay? Hey, way to go, baby. What do you want to know?
All right, do you think that governors, that leaders, that people in high office in the United States, more and more of them are going to reflect the kind of guy that a Chris Christie is, a guy that's a guy that can work with people, the moderate, if you will?
You know, Phil, a moderate is just a guy that can respond to any situation. A guy's a moderate who's a pragmatist. It's become a dirty word in our country, you know, the word moderate. The word moderate is almost like saying something about going to the bathroom. If you call someone a moderate, you're talking about them as if they're what people go to the bathroom for. You know? Hold on for a minute. Hey, baby? Honey? She doesn't want to talk to me.
Okay, I'm going to let you go then, Dean, all right?
Why?
Why are you letting him go?
Because he's talking crap. You know?
Yeah, that's right. I am talking crap.
Yeah, he said it. People will go to the bathroom.
He's talking horse dung here, okay?
Exactly.
No, see you later, Dean. He's not concentrating. He's thinking about his wife's rotten career and her rotten singing, okay?
How dare he? If Dean heard that, he would be upset.
Well, let him be upset. Because, frankly, while his wife is a good singer, she's not a great singer, and he'd do better if he would think about what he's on this radio show for. He's on this radio show to be talking with us about these elections, not his wife's career. And what was going on there?
He's chasing her, trying to talk to her, and she won't even talk to him.
Yeah, see, I think what's going on with him now is she's failing so miserably that she wants nothing to do with him. And he's following her around like a love-struck fan.
Well, that's just pathetic. Really pathetic. All right, Larry Grover, Conservatives of Kern County, joining us here on the Phil Henry Show. And, Larry, you've been following the news, I take it?
We have been following the news very carefully, Phil, and you got it right. Chris Christie's the winner there. McAuliffe is the winner in Virginia. And McAuliffe won by about 1.5%, over 1 million votes, over 1 million votes of 1,005,154, and Jen Cuccinelli, 976,469.
Let's get this man's name right. It's Cuccinelli. Okay, everybody?
I'm sorry, it's Cuccinelli.
Yeah, you got that, Larry?
Yeah, Cuccinelli. I was looking here very, very briefly. I didn't have a chance to, because I haven't followed the Virginia race as carefully as I did the New Jersey race, and I figured, I got to tell you, Phil, I thought this thing was in the sack for the Democrats when I saw the polls that said 51-39, but the rollout of Obamacare has been such a disaster that this guy... I'm sorry.
Cuccinelli.
Yeah, the guy Cuccinelli. I'm doing the best I can here, Phil. I'm trying to work with you.
No, that's fine. You know, Cuccinelli's his name.
Yeah. Cuccinelli is... Turn that up, will you? Hold on, Phil. Here comes a return now.
These historically low interest rates may not always be available.
Well, talk to me while you're waiting for it. Talk to me while you're waiting for it.
Turn it down, baby. I'm out on a date tonight. Her name is Virginia, as a matter of fact, and we're on our way to see a movie. We're going to see an art house film that she wanted to take me to see, something called, what is it called? Jimbo. Have you ever heard of Mojimbo? Is that what it is? Joe Jimbo. I guess I'm not saying it right. She's getting angry at me.
I've heard of a Kurosawa movie or some name like that. I'm not exactly sure.
What's the guy's name?
Kurosawa, the Japanese director.
Is he a Japanese? She's not even talking to me now. I think it's called Bojimbo or something like that. It's a Japanese. It's an art house movie she wanted to go see. But I can tell you that the election of Chris Christie, I think, doesn't spell relief, I'll tell you that. I think it spells trouble for the Republican Party as insofar as the Tea Party, because the Tea Party has been holding on by its fingernail for the loyalty of the Republican voter, and so far the only thing the Tea Party has been doing is stinking the room up everywhere they go. Now, I've had great sympathy for the Tea Party. I've been a big supporter of the Tea Party until I saw them starting to lose elections, and I saw them starting to act as sort of, blankety blank in the wood pile, and now I hate them. I don't want to have anything to do with them. And
well, that's very interesting. I mean, how consistent ethically is that?
Yes, if you're a Tea Party man, and then all of a sudden they're not winning elections for you, and you turn your back on them, what does that make you?
All I want to do is get some conservatives elected into some key offices in this country. I'll lay down and sleep with the devil, as I've said before. I'll lay down with the devil.
Isn't that kind of dirty?
What'd he say?
He's asking, is that... No, it's not dirty.
Dirty? I'm not saying literally lay down and do it with the devil. I'm saying I would get into bed with the devil if it meant I could get some conservatives elected.
Yeah, you'd let the devil do his thing with you.
No, I would not let the devil do his thing with me.
Well, then why are you using the term... Use another comparison.
Why should I use it? That's a perfectly good... Get into bed with the devil. I'm not talking about us having sex together. Are you kidding?
Then what are you going to get into bed with the devil for?
Because it's a figure of speech. It's a figure of speech. You get into bed with the devil. Okay?
Yeah, what are you doing in the bed? Sleeping?
Yeah, you're sleeping. No, you're not sleeping. Yes, there is... you're having a physical exchange with the devil, but it's not what you're... I would never, ever turn into the devil's catcher's mitt. You understand? If anything, I'm the pitcher. And
okay, the more you talk about this, Dean, the further... Or Larry, I should say.
Oh, now I'm sounding like Dean, huh? That guy that's PW because the wife has got a lousy horn player.
No, Larry. I'm sorry, Larry.
Yeah, you're not PW. You just got a mom that's all getting on the phone.
What is it with this guy Dickman? All of a sudden he's got the big mouth, huh? You know, he was fun having around for laughs, but this is business. Okay?
Hold on for a minute. We got to take a break. We'll get back to Larry. What is it? Isn't that from On the Waterfront?
Yes, your brother Terry was fun for laughs, but now this is business. I don't like this. Yes, it is from On the Waterfront.
Yeah, I thought so. All right,
What's that mean?
Never mind. I'll tell you later. I'll tell you when you're older. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com online right now at philhenryshow.com with our video cast, and we got Larry Grover on the line from Culver City, California, talking to us about these election returns. Chris Christie, Terry McAuliffe, and other issues like medical marijuana in Michigan that they will start to sell from actual pharmacies. That ought to be really interesting. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show. Shake it, babe. Uh-oh. What happened there, man? I just did a really weird thing. And what is the weird thing I just did? I hit a button and everything went dark on the video cast. But who cares, you know? We're a radio show, first, last, and always. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And welcome back here. And McAuliffe is on the stage there in Virginia, and he's about to give his victory speech. And the only reason why I was, and I have Larry Grover on the line here. Larry, obviously you're disappointed in Cuccinelli.
You know I am, Phil. I'm a little disappointed. We all had high hopes for Cooch.
Why do you know his nickname is Cooch, and that you thought his name was Cuccinelli?
What difference does that make? Yeah, I thought his name... I knew his nickname was Cooch.
Well, then why'd you call him Cuccinelli?
Because that's what it says. Next, any other point you want to make? You know, I'm here on this radio show tonight, Ms. Gray, to talk to Mr. Hendry.
I am on the panel, and I just wondered if you knew what the man's name was.
I think that Cooch did. a great job.
Okay, all right. Just back up, Margaret, a little bit. We got that figured out. He thought his name was Cuccinelli, but his nickname is Cooch. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. And please don't draw any connection between his nickname and what you and your friends call a certain part of a woman's anatomy when you're sitting around drinking wine in an alley. Okay?
I don't drink wine with my friends in an alley.
Or wherever you go to have your fun, because I know that a lot of you guys use that term as a dirty word. Now, cooch, see, now I don't even want to say it.
Well, why did you bring that up?
Because that's what his nickname is. And we've called him Cooch ever since.
You know, I didn't say anything. You said Cooch. Let's call him Cuccinelli, okay?
All right, Cuccinelli. I think he did an admirable job. Let me just say this, Phil. You know, I was enamored of the Tea Party like a lot of people until I saw them beginning to get us beat everywhere they went. When I saw the Tea Party handing us defeat after defeat after defeat, when I saw the Tea Party murdering us everywhere we went, those bastards would show up and they would turn victory into defeat, lickety-split, pretty as you please, as that guy Bozell says. That's when I said, I gotta back away from them. I gotta get away from them, man, like they are a bad smell. And I guess we didn't back up far enough because, Cooch, boy, that bothers me saying that now, you know.
Well, you know what, then call him Cuccinelli.
You're drawing more attention to it the more you get worried about it.
No, you're right. Cuccinelli, I think, would have been a great candidate, but this running mate of his, this Jackson, this guy, as you said, Phil, was a very strange man. He had some strange social views. Excuse me, had strange social views. Very, very bizarre guy, and didn't do us any favors at all. As soon as he got picked as the running mate, I don't understand why it is the Republican Party, back east especially, out here in California, we got enough problems, why they can't put their foot down and say, no weirdos tonight, Mom. Okay? Because that's what's going on with the Republican Party right now. We get weirdos in there and we can't get elected.
Well, I mean, it looks like I said this, and I believe you referenced it, Larry, at the beginning. Leaders like Christie may be the kind of guys that, the kind of Republican leaders that can get elected that reflect a fiscal conservatism when it is needed, but certainly are pragmatic enough to recognize that they have to do what they have to do to help their state survive, to help the people of their state survive. That working with a president, especially a president, doesn't mean you're a traitor to your party. And these kinds of things, and not be so, I don't know, it just seems like those cats, those Tea Party cats, are radical. I've always had the same feeling about the progressives.
Well, Phil, if there's one thing that I've never really liked about you, it's that you're scared of the progressives, you're scared of the extremes. You don't want to take a step, you don't want to walk out there on the edge and stand there and say, okay, here I am. I'm out here on the edge. I'm working and living on the edge. I'm walking on the wild side, like this guy Lou Reed, who just passed on, God bless him, rest his soul. He said, hey, let's walk on the wild side, huh? And he was talking about cross-dressing, which I don't endorse, but he was walking on the wild side.
Yeah, put that together with Cooch, and you've got a real platform.
You know something, Ms. Gray, you can be a smartass all you want.
I'm not trying to be a smartass so much as what I'm saying here, Larry. You're hardly the one to talk about going to extremes.
What do you mean I'm hardly the one? You're
bringing up Lou Reed, Walk on the Wild Side, about cross-dressing.
All right, it was a bad example, okay?
Talk about being in politics, cross-dressing, and cooch.
I already pointed that out.
Let's grow up a little and get off of cooch and cross-dressing. So the future, you would say, lies with the kind of Republican leadership that a Chris Christie provides, as opposed to these extreme Tea Party types. Now then, how is that going to happen? Is the Republican Party in any position to shed the Tea Party people once and for all? Are they in any position? Do they have the guts? Have they got the people? Have they got anybody in a leadership position, anybody with the personality, strength of character, and strength of conviction to tell the Tea Party people to go take a freaking flying finienza, as my dear departed father used to say?
I don't know, Phil. It's a great question. I think we all looked to Boehner to see if he had a pair. There are times when I think the Tea Party... See, the problem is there are times when the Tea Party does some good. I know that Cruz was a pain in everyone's you-know-what. It was like having a softball jammed up there, that Cruz. It was like having a softball up there without any of that, you know, the stuff, the preparation, you-know-what.
I understand.
All right, so, you know... But at times you want to have a Tea Party guy to kind of hold defeat to the kind of just say, hey, let's mess things up a little bit because it's going too fast. It's going too, you know.
Even if the change is good, even if it's something the country needs.
What do you mean even if it's something the country needs? Like Obamacare? You don't know that. And as it turns out, Cooch was right. And I'll use his nickname here. He should proudly say, hi, my name is Cooch. And I was against Obamacare. And why? Because the whole thing is a cluster you-know-what.
There's a big difference there, Larry, between a computer, a website not working, and the idea of health care being a bad idea. Big, big difference. There's a website that doesn't work. That doesn't necessarily mean that Obamacare is a bad idea. All right, we're going to be back here in a world-famous Phil Henry show. We have Rudy Canoza joining us tonight. We have Dave Oliva coming back as well. We'll be looking into other news stories. The mayoral race in New York City has concluded. They have a new mayor in New York City as well. And more on this stolen art story, which I think is fascinating. And we'll find out what these guys are saying, McAuliffe and Christie. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
That guy's name is Cooch. You ought to say it.
You knock it off with Cooch. Woo! Hey, welcome back. World famous Phil Henry Show. With me is Margaret Leonard. We have Robert Leonard. We have Margaret Gray, Robert Leonard, and Bud Dickman.
Margaret Leonard.
No, I misspoke. And we have with us Larry Grover, and also on the line is Kurt Queedy. And no, actually... Is Jack Armstrong again? I don't want to have Jack Armstrong.
No, I got the guys in West Virginia.
Yeah, Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton are with us from the State House there in West Virginia as these election returns are pouring in from across the country. We also have Larry Grover on the line there from Culver City. Larry, how are you? You still with us?
Right here, Phil, and I was just watching Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, we'll get into O'Reilly is talking about Obamacare. Do you have an observation there?
Well, I think he's absolutely right, you know, that the president was misleading the country, and I think we've got a situation here where there's no question in my mind at all that Obama lied and lied through his teeth.
Wait, can I ask a question here?
No, hold on, Phil, because this is what you do, you and your friends who are Obama supporters. You don't even let me or any of my people say what we want to say, and that is that Obama lied, okay?
Yeah.
He lied.
Okay, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
When he said that you can keep your insurance, and it turns out that no, you can't keep your insurance because some insurance policies do not follow the law, is that a lie, or is that in keeping with what the Obamacare law says?
Well, he said, what do you mean in keeping with the Obamacare law says?
My question for you is a simple one. People want to hold on to insurance, I guess, that is illegal, that, in other words, charges women more money than men, for an example, okay? This is what people want to hang on to. They want that. They think that's fair insurance coverage. They think that's something that they want to pay for, a woman. You know, when we talk about being fair in this society, everybody reacts against that so vehemently as if it's it's communism, you know. If you ask a man to pay as much money as a woman, or you allow a woman to pay as much money or as little money as a man does, apparently that's some kind of a communist thing.
No, it's not a communist thing. I don't know what you're talking about. Obama said you can hold on to your insurance.
Right, but there are provisions in this law saying that some insurance policies are patently illegal because of what they're charging individual people. They're charging some people more money than others based upon their gender.
Isn't that what the indication is? Aren't women more likely to have problems and physical ailments and so forth? So
women are more sickly than men, is that it?
Well, I mean, do you think an insurance company is going to be charging more money for a woman unless they absolutely, well, you know...
No, yes, I do think they would charge more money for a woman, even though they absolutely don't have to. Yeah, I think they'd come up with all kinds of cockamamie reasons and excuses. I think insurance companies are like any other company. I don't know what makes them so morally upstanding that they can't, manipulate some piece of information or just manipulate the facts or the laws or the environment in any individual case to make as much money as they can. All right, let me get Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton on the phone here.
Well, hold on for a minute, Phil, because you're the host and you get to go, and now you're going to... I'd like to respond to a couple of things you just said.
Go ahead.
Forget it. Get these two... I'll do it when you get these two jackasses.
Whoa, don't call my guests jackasses, all right?
I apologize. Get the two guys from Virginia where...
All right, Kurt Queedy, Guy Barton on the line with us. Kurt, how are you?
Well, Phil, I'm doing good, and I'm doing a lot better now that I saw that Governor Christie. I can root for a Republican. I can root for a Republican. A Republican good, and I know that Chris Christie good, so we're very, very, very happy to see Chris Christie elected governor of New Virginia, New Jersey, and I'm very happy to, of course, see Terry McCollum. Now to Guy. Come on over, Guy.
Hey, Phil.
Guy, how are you?
I'm doing good.
All right, gentlemen, you got Larry Grover from California on the phone here. We're talking about Obamacare and what everybody is saying on the right, that Obama lied, or, or something like that. So is it likely that Obama lied, or is it likely that Obama was not being clear?
Well, I don't know. I think the president... saying you can hold on to insurance if you want it, but why would you want to hold on to insurance that is an illegal policy, as you just got done saying, Phil, that treats people not fairly, charges some people more than others, doesn't cover for basic things like dental or maybe hospitalization or maybe even prescription medicine, Now, why do you want to hold on to insurance like that? That is not coverage. You're not covered. I have to tell you, I've been all over this country. I have never seen people in my life talking about wanting to have the right to walk around without any insurance coverage at all. And when they do get sick, they got to throw themselves on the mercy of a doctor, and that winds up getting paid or passed on to you and me. And they feel just fine about that. But they don't want Obamacare, because, they're going to have to pay a little something, or maybe the charity going to be coming direct from the government and doesn't necessarily come from their neighbors.
Wait, hold on for a minute. What are you talking about? This is Larry Grover. Is this Kurt?
Yeah, this is Kurt Queedy, Mr. Grover. How are you?
I'm good, but I don't understand what you're saying. Essentially, the following: you're saying that people who have rejected Obamacare outright and don't want to have insurance are somehow they're what?
Well, I'm saying if you don't want to have insurance, and then all of a sudden you get sick and you have to throw yourself in the mercy of a doctor or a hospital, you know who's going to pay for that. It's all the other people that do have insurance because their rates are going to go up. But those people are fine with that. They got no problem with that. They don't want Obamacare, though, because that means that it's going to be spread out a little more evenly, I guess, among all the taxpayers. And that means a more direct government interference in their mind. I don't understand them at all.
Well, okay, I hear what he's saying, and it's the argument, Larry. How do you respond to that? How do you respond? We can say all we want about computer glitches. A computer glitch doesn't mean Obamacare doesn't work. It means the computer ain't working. Obama's saying something like, you can keep your insurance. Oh, no, you can't, because some insurance is illegal. In other words, it doesn't provide the right coverage. You can concentrate on Obama was not being honest with us, and I suppose this is an argument that if you believe that Obama is dishonest, you're going to have more fuel for the fire, and you can continue to think he's a scumbag and feel very self-righteous about all of that and forget about the greater reality which is health care insurance, whether the country is better off with it or not. So, you know, I don't think the guy lied. I think what he's saying is you can hold on to your insurance if you like it. But, hey, the law, and he didn't bring this up, and he should have, but the law is going to say there's some insurance that does not provide basic coverage, and it is going to be illegal, outlawed. You can't offer that insurance anymore because it doesn't do anybody any good. There's no hospital plan there. There's no prescription medicine plan. It's just some fancy-ass plan that the insurance companies come up with, you know, as another financial instrument.
You know, this is why I don't know what you just said there.
No, I know you didn't know what I just said. I know that.
Well, but so is that an insult to me, right?
Well, I'm just saying, man, this is an issue that you got to think about. You can't just say it's Obama and therefore it sucks. It's socialism, therefore it sucks. You got to look at this thing.
I've been looking at it, Phil, and I think it's a pretty low blow to say that if I don't want to have insurance, that if I get sick, I'm going to go ahead and throw myself on the mercy of a hospital and my neighbors can pay for it and they can stick it up there. You know what? You know, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I want to pay for my own insurance, and I want to pick my insurance.
All right, do you want to pick it? I'm going to just ask you something.
No, hold on for a minute, Phil. I'm not done. And where's this guy, Aquiti and Barton? Aren't they there? Because these are the guys that I was supposed to be talking with here. No, I'm here, sir. I'm listening to both of you, and I got a big guy over here. He's getting a gobbler and a couple of beer for me. He's getting what? He get a gobbler. I don't know what a gobbler is.
Don't worry. It's something at the restaurant that they're at.
Well, I'm just going to say what I want to say.
Hey, what am I going to be able to jump in?
Well, go right ahead, sir, if you want to.
I was going to say, if you want to have insurance, Mr. Grover, that doesn't have prescription medicine, doesn't have hospitalization, has some kind of a deductible that's like 75% or 50%, and you want to have the right to have that, which essentially means you don't have insurance coverage. You're just paying an insurance company. They got you to pay them for something that doesn't cover you at all, and you feel good about saying you got health insurance, but if you ever actually had to use that health insurance, you die.
Yeah, that's true. You die slow.
You die. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't understand what you're saying. When you say that I die, if I elect only to have health insurance for the doctor's visit, and for the different things that I need, and I don't necessarily want to get hospital, why do I have to have hospitalization?
Because what if you need to go to the hospital? What if you have to go to the hospital?
Well, then I'm sure that I'll be able to pay for it. I'll find the money.
Oh, you're going to find the money. Can you put that in writing? Oh, wait a minute. It doesn't matter if you put it in writing, because even if you break your promise there, I'm still going to have to pay for it, because they're going to pass the rates on to me. And that's what I'm trying to say to you. I'd love to be able to take your word for it, sir. But unfortunately, in this country today, nobody's word is good for nothing. All you have to do is look at all the bank loans that people signed, said they'd pay back, and didn't.
Yeah, that's another thing Obama wants to let people get away with.
Wait, well, hold on for just a second here, man. Now you're talking two different... On the one hand, Obama is a bad guy for letting people get away with not backing up the mortgages that they signed. On the other hand, Obama is a bad guy because... he wants to hold people to the responsibility of insurance and not allow them to throw themselves on the mercy of the hospital or doctor and pass that cost on to other people that have insurance. I don't understand that thinking. To me, it's just knee-jerk, automatic anti-Obamaism, you know?
Hey, look, you haven't even answered the question here about this guy Obama. And Bill O'Reilly said it very, very clearly. He lied.
All right, hold on. I got to take a break. I got Larry Grover, and I've got Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton from the West Virginia State House, and they are with us here this evening. We're talking about the elections that have taken place across the country, some of them just wrapped up, and some of them, well, all of them just wrapped up, some of them for office and other races, various issues, medical marijuana among them. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Show and Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton and Larry Grover. You know, there comes a point where you just don't even... why talk about it, man? Because everybody is... everyone's got their mind made up, so why even talk about it?
Well, aren't you going to go back to the calls?
I will, but what's the point, you know? I'll go back, I'll talk, and it'll... I can predict what everybody is going to say. I can predict the position that everybody's going to take. You know, where are we now? Well, we're where O'Reilly is, which is the following thing. Forget about whether there's actually something called, you know, forget about whether health care works, whether we need it. It's whether Obama lied or whether he didn't lie. We've been talking about that for years and years. And you can prove that Obama comes from America. You got a guy that's running for office or is in office right now, this guy Ted Cruz. His father thinks the guy's from Kenya. You got this scumbag Newt Gingrich who calls Obama not an American president. So in other words, he's a dishonest guy. Obama's a liar, and that's just... So this is just more proof that he's a liar, right? Is that it?
Well, you know, Phil, you're the one that brought these people on.
But there's no point in me talking with these guys, you know? Anyway, because I just know what they're going to say. Okay, so Larry Grover. So Obama's a big liar, and health care doesn't work.
Hold on for a minute. You know, Phil, I'm sorry, but if the guy's dishonest...
You know, maybe he is. Let's say that he is dishonest. Does that mean that health care is not a workable plan for America? Let's say he's dishonest and he knew that you couldn't hold on to your insurance.
Well, and he misled the American people, and the American people would be against health care.
They'd be against national health care?
Yes.
Okay. And with the American people being against national health care, would that be an intelligent decision?
I believe that the American people know what they... Let me tell you, look, this is not Europe. This is America, okay?
Right, this is America where people who don't have insurance go ahead and just throw themselves on the mercy of a hospital and pass the cost on to other people that have insurance. That's the America that I live in. That's really fair.
What are you talking about?
I just got done laying out to you what the reality is. So whether or not Obama's a liar or whether American health care or Obamacare works or doesn't work, the fact is, let's just keep the system in place that we got, which means that we're going to be continuing these trillions of dollars in health care costs we have in this country every year, with no end in sight, with it continuing to chew up an ever-increasing percentage of the household budget as well as the national outlay. And there's no answer because Obamacare sucks, national health care sucks, he lied, you can this, that. So there's no answer until we all go broke, standing in line waiting for a doctor.
No, I think that there are solutions. Tort reform.
Oh, God.
Well, you don't want those solutions because that doesn't mean that there's nationalism and there's not socialism there.
Tort reform is going to really do the job, huh? All right, Kurt.
I think it'll do the job because it's $150 billion. I know that that's not a lot, but it's a start, and that's all I'm trying to say.
All right, Kurt, you and Guy are having your gobbler. Any thoughts?
Well, Phil, you got my sympathy on this. Look, I understand what Mr. Grover is trying to say. He doesn't want communism, socialism, or this. And I'm not disagreeing with that.
I don't think there's a threat of communism, but I think the encroaching socialism,
I don't disagree with that. I don't want communism either. But I can assure you that this is so far away from communism that there are countries that have national health care. It's never going to be communist. One of them are neighbors to the north. And last time I checked, communism ain't even on the table as a viable form of government. It went south over 20 years ago. However, having said that, I can understand you're going to be afraid of that. But the law's been passed. And whether Obama lied this, lied that, or something else, whether Obama got it right or got it wrong, the law is the law, and it says you can't have that kind of insurance. I don't know what kind of insurance you want to have. But if you want to have insurance in this country, you've got to have a basic coverage. That's what the law says. And you can't force women to pay more money than a man pays.
Well, I don't know if that's the case or not.
I'm telling you that's the case. That's why they made that illegal. You know?
See, that's one of the reasons why, if you say, I want to hold on to my coverage, well, what coverage is that? Here's my coverage. My wife pays more for insurance than I do. I mean, what is that, you know?
Well, I mean, I haven't been married in a long time, but that to me, I bet you that's just one of those red herrings. you know?
No, it's not. It's just, it's an example of what are insurance plans that are now illegal. You can't do that. You can't charge people that. You can't make them pay that. You're not allowed to do that. Now, if Obama failed to mention that, then, okay, you can call him a liar. Or he's dumb. He forgot to mention it because he wasn't thinking of it. I don't know, you know. But let's say he's a liar, and he didn't tell us that, oh, yeah, there's some insurance that you won't be able to hang on to because it's going to be illegal because it screws you. I don't know why a president would want to hold that back on purpose. It sounds like something that was perhaps an oversight, or maybe it, he thought the American people had read the law. I don't know what.
Let me tell you something about Obama. He's like any other politician. He'll get away with cold-blooded murder if he can, especially when it means the survival of his little pet projects. And this Obamacare, from beginning to end, has been one big bill of sale, man. I'm telling you, he sold us a bill of...
Bill of goods. This is really boring. You better...
What do you mean it's boring?
Going on for half an hour, it sucks. It's all about health care.
Hey, who is that? Is that that Dickman?
Hold on. What is it with you guys?
You've been talking about this for half an hour, and that show is just dragging, man. It's no good. No good at all.
Yeah, get off this, Phil. Anything. Talk sports. Talk about anything. Talk about...
Don't talk about what?
I was going to say talk about... girls, women, sex, your...
Okay, I'm going to let you guys go then, because my staff is in revolt here, huh?
Well, all right, I mean, you know, I totally understand. I'm going to go and get some more to eat. I understand that it is kind of a boring topic. I'm kind of a boring guy. And guys, too, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty dull.
Well, I don't think I'm dull. I think I'm an interesting man.
Well, tonight you're pretty dull. That's what my staff's saying, so I got to let you go.
Oh, man, that's a real jip.
So thanks a lot.
Well, somebody had to say something, Phil. It was going on. It was interminable. You're getting all worked up about what? You don't know enough about these topics to debate these things.
Yeah, but I'm debating those idiots. And I'm not even debating all of them. I was just talking to Larry. And I'm not even debating Larry. I'm just asking him questions, you know.
Yeah, but it ain't the right questions and stuff. You're not trying to do the Bill Hannity or whatever the guy's name is.
Don't talk about Bill Hannity.
Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, you're not him, man.
Well, it's true, Phil. You're not them, and you never will be. You're not a brain. You're a funny man. You're a clown. Just clown it up and leave the real thinking for the real men. I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, not at all. Leave the real thinking for the real men.
What I mean by that is leave the...
Leave the dull topics like healthcare to,
Yeah, people as quiet like George Stavropoulos, guys like that.
Well, you know, I mean, I see what you're saying, but the least I could have done... I mean, tonight there's a big election, and people are talking about it, and there was O'Reilly. Yeah, forget it.
Well, don't start acting like a baby.
No, it's fine. It's fine. All right, we're going to come back here, and, well, we'll just continue to talk a little bit here. We got this New York City race, and...
Don't do the New York City. Get this stuff out. Take this stuff and throw it away, bud.
Yeah, I'm getting rid of all this, Mr. Henry. It's no good. It's no damn good. Can't have it.
You're going to get rid of... What?
I'm getting rid of all this stuff.
All right, so great. So I'm just going to have to start...
You're going to have to just start to wing it.
Great. We'll wing it right after this. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Watch us wing it on stage in San Francisco at the end of January at the Sketch Fest.
Woo!
Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Well, that's some spooky stuff here.
Five Finger Death Punch.
Well, that's great. Five Finger Death Punch. Oh, that's with the guy from...
Yeah, Judas Priest. I don't know much about him.
It's a good band. Anyway, welcome back here. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. So we got rid of all the guys from the healthcare debate.
Look, I'm not trying to make you feel bad, but I think...
No. You're not trying to make me feel bad.
I think the time... has arrived where you just have to recognize, Phil, that talking about these things is beyond, I think, your ability. There is a group of people, talk show hosts, that can discuss these things in great depth.
Do you want to listen to them instead?
No, I'm not saying that.
No, they stink.
They stink?
Yeah.
But let them stink in their own little stink room. I don't know.
Let them stink in their own little stink room.
Let them do that. Because you don't want to do that. You know?
Well, look, I know what you're saying. I mean, it's nobody's going to win. Nobody's going to win. And I don't even know why I'm talking about it, because I'm not going to convince anybody. I think it was more than... Larry Grover bugs me. He's another one of those guys. Larry's one of those guys that is just as dogmatic. He's just entrenched and stubborn as anybody, you know. You can stick his face right up to the reality of something, and he's just going to, well, you know.
There's people who are going to be like that, Phil. You can't do anything about it.
Yeah, but that guy, you talk about, he's...
You talk about him sleeping on a cot on his mother's, on a service porch?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the whole thing with him. He's sleeping on a cot on his mother's service porch. His wife and his kids don't even talk. His ex-wife, she's gone, but his kids don't even talk to him. He hasn't had a date with a real woman in God knows how long. And all of that because he's got his head so far up the rear end of the political thing. And all he can think about, every time there's a Democrat in the office, he's trying to get the guy impeached or thrown out. It was Clinton, and now it's Obama. And as a result, he's got no life. And then I get him on the air, and I talk to him about this stuff, and it doesn't sound like he knows what he's talking about. It sounds like he's just, you know, I think he's probably...
I think he's sitting during the day with a bottle of cognac, looking at CNN, and just draining the bottle, and then taking a nap.
Well, you know what, then we ought to stop having him on the show. Hey, Larry, if you're listening, and is he still working at that print shop?
Yeah, he said he had another big job, another Mexican wedding. A lot of invitations to the reception.
Isn't that nice?
What a racist, bud. What?
I didn't say it. He did.
Well, yeah, don't bring it up. Did he say he got a Mexican wedding?
Well, he said it was a big wedding.
Oh, so you just assumed it was Mexican.
Well...
All right, so anyway, that's the problem I got. The personalities of some of these guys just is beyond me. Now, the other story that's actually probably more in keeping with something that we would like to talk about on the show as opposed to being forced to, and that is this guy, Richie Incognito. This dude is a player for the Miami Dolphins. He's been suspended indefinitely. The reason for this is a hazing that he did on a guy named Jonathan Martin. By hazing, what I'm talking about is a form of harassment that is good-natured, or it's supposed to be, and it's a way of sort of joining a player to a team. It's a way of getting people to become, members of the family. You know, you sort of have to pass a series of rather silly but nonetheless difficult tests of loyalty and faithfulness, and then you're accepted into the larger family of the football team. It's been going on for years, and they were doing it in Miami. Now, there were statements by the team that they didn't like some of the hazing that was going on, that they'd outlawed most of it, if not all of it. One of these guys, this guy Incognito, apparently was giving this kid, Martin, a hard time. And one of the things the guy... these cats, talk about making money. They forced him to pick up a $15,000 dinner tab.
What?
I at least I think it was a $15,000. It was a $15,000 something. Might have been a dinner tab, or it might have been paying for everybody to do something. But boy, is that a lot of bread, you know?
Yeah, they got all the money though, and playing in football.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean a guy gets to stick a gun to your head and say, "Okay, you're the rookie on the team, so cough it up, man." 15 grand. Wow. So anyway, the guy has been suspended from the ball club. Incognito. I'm over on his Twitter feed, or at least I thought I was over on his Twitter feed. Results for Incognito. Where is this guy?
Well, he's that big, beefy-looking Claude right there.
Yeah, I know who he is. I was looking at his comments yesterday, and they were essentially the following. I want my name back. I want my reputation back. How dare you guys, do this to me? How dare you... run me into the ground. He feels that he's been treated unfairly. Here's his latest tweet, and this is from November 3. What's the date today? The 5th? Miami Dolphins statement on Jonathan Martin. That is on the Richie Incognito Twitter feed. So that means there's somebody else working his Twitter feed.
Why do you say that?
Well, that's not exactly what I would call a partisan statement, okay? It's a very, very objective, bland statement. And I imagine that that wasn't written by him, because this guy, like I said yesterday, was talking about how he'd been screwed by ESPN, Adam Scheffler, that one reporter, CBS Sports, ABC Sport. He felt like he'd been railroaded by everybody. Here's the last tweet that it looks like he actually posted. Three things cannot be long hidden: the sun, the moon, and the truth. Buddha.
What?
What is he talking about, Buddha?
That's a quote from the Buddha, according to Richie Incognito, who looks a lot like the Buddha.
Hey.
Thank you. Let me see if I can get some more of Richie's tweets here, man. Go to full profile. Here it is. Landed in Providence. This is the calm before the storm. Adversity has drawn us tighter. Great opportunity for us tomorrow. This was on October the 28th, so he hasn't really tweeted much of anything, Mr. Incognito.
That's his real name?
Yes, it's his real name. Although a writer, I thought, very, very humorously said, Richie Incognito, who's failed to live up to the promise of his name.
Isn't that cute?
What's that mean?
Incognito means basically, incognito means like keeping it low-key, being invisible, being out of the public eye. I'm out Twitter. It's been real. Time for GTA, film study, and sleep. This is a couple of weeks ago. So he has he's left the Twitterverse, as it were, for the time being. Richie Incognito, the guy's been suspended. Now, they had a piece of film footage or video footage of him here not too long ago, showing him raging about what looked like a sports bar, his shirt off, bouncing around between billiard tables, guys laughing. I don't know whether this is roid rage or...
Well, I was going to say, these guys with the steroids, don't they go hog wild?
Yeah, they do, man. You get too much steroid, and they go ape. They'll go wild all over you.
Well, I'm not going to say the guy's on steroids. What do you mean they go ape and wild all over you?
They do. They're steroids.
Well, I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I don't know why the guy was pissed off. Probably because of this whole thing that's been bedeviling him. But it's hazing. And the whole reason why this whole thing became such a big deal is because it was supposedly racial, and it was over the top. It was way beyond what it should have been. And this poor guy, and I say poor guy because, man, believe me, I know what it is to be misquoted, and I know what it is to be purposefully misquoted. I know what it is for a newspaper writer who wants to make you look bad, regardless of what the truth is, and that's exactly what he sets about doing. And you know what happened, and you know what you told the guy, and then you know what the guy is writing.
Well, what specifically are you talking about?
I'm not going to get into any specific stories. I'll tell you one thing. You know, when I was in the middle of that lawsuit in Miami between a former player and myself, okay, I saw the sports writers in Miami do something that I kind of suspected they would do, but I was sort of hoping they wouldn't. But, you know, at the end of the day, why was I expecting anything? But sports writers will not write what the truth is. Sports writers will write what will gain them favor, longevity, and further solidify their career. And this is true, because if you're going to write a story about a lawsuit between a football player and a talk show host, and you're a sports writer, you're going to take the side of the football player.
Why is that?
Otherwise, you're not going to be allowed access to that locker room, that player. You're out, man. What's the guy going to do, hang out at my house? Hey, well, at least Phil Henry's my friend, as opposed to being on the side of the Miami Dolphins. So, I was kind of hoping, well, you know, this guy...
Yeah, but what makes you think they should have been on your side?
Because if you looked at it on the face of what had happened, it's quite obvious that the player had been engaged in some rather egregious behavior, regardless of what you thought of me or what you thought of talk show hosts in general or how much you really, really wanted to party with the Dolphins, if you took a look at what the story was and you took a look at what had precipitated it, you probably would have been more inclined to favor what I was trying to say. But it ain't going to happen, man. It ain't going to happen. They're not going to run the risk of fouling the waters with the Miami Dolphins so they can write an objective story. And it's sports anyway. It doesn't have to be objective. So, you know, any guy that calls himself a sports journalist, I always put an asterisk next to that. Yeah, you're writing about sports. Yeah, you're reporting, but it's not like you're a real reporter because you don't have any, there's no real heavy-ass truth that is more important than you having access to the team locker room. It's like this. When I started my radio career in Orlando, and Orlando was trying to get an NFL franchise way back before Tampa had one. They were going to get two franchises in the NFL. They eventually became Tampa and Seattle. But Orlando was trying to get a franchise as well. And the efforts that the city of Orlando made were at times, you know, good and professional, and at other times they're a little sloppy and left a lot to be desired. The first thing that they needed in Orlando was a stadium. They didn't have a stadium, but they kept talking to the NFL about, oh, here are our plans, look at what we're going to do, look at the construction company we've hired, look at the beautiful architectural design, so on and so forth. And when the NFL sort of rejected that or would not say anything favorable about it, Orlando would get a little, the sports writers in the Orlando paper would get a little huffy and get a little upset. And somebody pointed something out. They said, you know, you guys are not exactly in a position to be getting bitchy and pissy and moany about stuff. You're a little small, dinky-ass town. You ain't got diddly squat, man. You haven't got any professional sports down there other than a minor league team. Who do you guys think you're muscling anyway? Why do you think the NFL needs you? You know, and if the team actually lands in Orlando and they start playing crappy, and you're going to write all honestly about how crappy they are, what a lousy product they're putting on the field, and how the fans are being gypped, really? Are you really going to do that? You know, the very first major league team that you've ever had in the history of the city, and you're going to go, what a disappointment. I mean, we really thought we were going to have an NFL team, and look at how crappy they are, you know.
Well, what does that mean?
It means they're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. They're not going to run the risk of pissing off the only major league franchise the city's ever had by writing all this bad stuff about it when they want to keep that team. You know, it ain't like they're New York and they got 9 million teams and there's all kinds of things to do. New York sports writers will always be the greatest in the country because they don't give a damn, man. The teams need that city more than the city needs them. That's the difference between New York and some wide spot in the road like Orlando. So that's why it's not really journalism. It is a kind of a public relations job coupled with you're like an entertainment reviewer, you're like a dance critic.
Well, that almost sounds like the whole thing is a bunch of fairies dance around and stuff.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, that's what, you're not a reporter, you are a public relations guy mixed in with like a critic. You know, that's it. You're not a reporter. So that's why I think this incognito thing and all the rest of this stuff, man, you know, it's a whole lot of nothing, man. It's hazing, whatever. The dude isn't dead. The guy's giving him a hard time. The guy cried. He went to a psychiatrist, whatever. Okay, maybe they should stop it. I don't know how much of this is the fans' business. If you don't like it, don't go see the team play. Period. And if there's a crime being committed, the guy will get arrested, throw his ass in jail, and get on with the business of having a football team. If the guy sends this dude around the edge and he commits suicide, if he bullies him, this kind of thing, all right, then, you know, it's something to look at. But this is horse dung. And if there are more serious things to write about them. I doubt it, though.
Well, what about the steroid thing? There were people, you talked about roid rage and things like that.
Steroid thing is, it's never going to sell newspapers. It's never going to sell newspapers, and it's never going to get...
You thought we'd get boring, Mr. Humphrey.
Yeah, this is dull.
This is dull.
It is kind of dull, yeah.
All right.
Well, don't get...
We'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show and try to find something to talk about here. Sorry that it ain't exactly... World-famous Phil Hendry show and philhendryshow.com. I thought it was pretty interesting, this... Anyway, don't forget a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com, and you can watch me squirm on video here. Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. At philhendryshow.com, of course, every night, as I mentioned, we have our video cast. We also have our podcast of the show you can listen to the next day and check out and see what are going on each and every night as we struggle through this weird world of ours. We also have a classic podcast, and we also have the Bobby Dooley podcast, which is going great guns, man. She's getting some serious-ass downloads. You know, I don't know why you don't want to do one, Margaret.
I don't want to do a podcast. I think the whole thing is...
What?
Well, it's everyone does a podcast, and I've got other things to do. I'm a mother. I'm a wife. I do this. I'm on this.
Well, yeah, you're on the daily podcast of the show. But I mean...
Don't you want to do like your own?
No, I don't want to do my own. I don't have any interest in that folderol and that flummery. I think it's just a big... Pardon me for using the term. I think it's a big circle jerk.
The what?
You want me to yell it?
Margaret, if you can't say it, then don't say it. If you can't come out and say it in a very clear and forthright way, go ahead.
You said forthright, Elmer.
Yeah, Mr. Fudd, you said forthright.
Fine. If you can't say it in a forthright way, then don't say it.
I can say it in a forthright way. I just don't want to say it loud in case there are children listening. So it's a big circle.
What?
It's a big circle.
Hey, forget it. She said circle jerk.
How dare you?
Well, don't say it then. Podcasts, there's millions of podcasts, lots of people who listen to them. Anyway, Bobby's is doing really well, and she just did Dana Gould today or yesterday, and it's online. Dana Gould's an interesting guy. Have you seen him perform? Or?
Well, I heard him on I think he's a very interesting man. He's an actor, and he has the comedy special coming up on Thursday night.
Yeah, he's going to be on Showtime and everything.
He'll be on Showtime with his comedy special, then he's going to be on Mob City on TNT, which is another... mob show. You know, it's very interesting how we cycle around to these shows about the 20s and 30s, and that happened in the 60s when there was the Untouchables. There was a number of television shows on that were cop dramas based in the Roaring 20s. They called them the Roaring 20s because the country was living high on the hog and partying like there was like it was 1999, even though
it was 1929.
Right. Or 1919, and there was prohibition. There was no legal booze, but I guess that
they had a bathtub gin, man, and apparently that stuff was so good, everybody partying, doing the Charleston and stuff.
Yes, they did the Charleston, and they did the Black Bottom.
What's that mean?
I don't know, but it was called the Black Bottom.
Is that racist?
No, it ain't racist, man. I don't know what it means. What did it mean?
I don't know. Someone sat down in a bucket of tar or something?
Yeah, that's probably why.
I don't know. That sounds pretty stupid.
Why does that sound stupid?
Someone sat down in a bucket of tar, and that's why it's called the Black Bottom?
Well, what else is it, Phil?
I don't know. Maybe there's a name of a... Maybe it's a part of a town, you know, like the Black Bottom was a part of a neighborhood or something like that.
It could be racial.
Man, if it's racial, then I'm glad nobody does that dance anymore. Yeah, but you can't outlaw it just 'cause.
Yes, you can do anything you want. Outlaw it because it's black, but I don't know if it's racial. Anyway, yeah, they had all kinds of dances and stuff, and the whole country was going ape, and they were doing it on that gin, on that bathtub stuff that'd make you go blind. That's what that prohibition booze did. Sometimes it made people go blind. It was so bad.
But they had beer, too.
They had beer that came down from Canada, and they had some good booze, but a lot of the stuff that was homebrew, and by that, what I mean by that is that it was made in a guy's apartment... It was bad news, dude. Bad news stuff. And some people actually did. They lost their sight. So there's all of these shows, and in the middle of all of them is the, what's it called? Mob City with Dana Gould starting in December or January on TNT. Phil Henry Show, will see you next hour with more right after the news break here. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And welcome back here from the El Pacifico every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast. And it has, it's been a fantastically interesting process here from the very beginning, rebooting the show back in August. You know, this is a radio show that is an entertainment product primarily. We don't do news talk because... I hate it, for starters, but every now and again, you know, there's a story that you want to pay attention to. And that has to do with, like, elections and stuff. So, you know, I was doing what I could do tonight, Margaret, in covering this stuff.
I know, but you're not doing... No one does a good job, Phil, doing this kind of... this dreck. No one does a good job with it, and I just think it's a waste of your time. You can listen to any of these talk shows, and they'll be covering this stuff...
Well, no, I understand that, but, you know, we had Larry Grover waiting, and we had the two guys from West Virginia.
And they're going to do what they're going to do, which is just the same drivel. Now, I am a liberal, and I believe very much in President Obama. And you can make as much fun of me as you want to, that's fine, but I'd rather be me than that meathead Larry Grover, who is an unapologetic... Tea Party imbecile. And I like Larry. He's a good man. He has been perverted by an obviously very sick home environment. His mother, I suspect...
All right, well, let's not get into his mother and his relationships with women or anything like that. Yeah, you're right. Larry's a nice guy, but he's completely politically the opposite of you. That's what's going on in this country right now, you know. That's what's going on in this country right now. Everybody thinks everybody else is an idiot. That's exactly what's happening. Everyone thinks everyone else is an idiot. Everybody that doesn't want to be lumped into a category lumps everybody into a category. It's like this moron that was sending me messages on Facebook. This guy starts off because he can't drink. This guy, I'm telling you, folks, if you can't hold a drink, then just don't drink, you know. This guy sends me a message on Facebook saying that... I'm a liberal turd, and I'm a social whatever. You know, like I'm a 60s. It's the same thing that I hear all of these idiots say. People who don't know anything about me, they hear one thing, and they automatically got you figured out. So fine. So you know. So I did that to that guy. I said, "Oh, you're a conservative. You don't like Obamacare. You must be Tea Party, man." Hey, don't call me Tea Party. Well, hey, you know what? If you don't like being stereotyped, then don't do it. Because as far as I'm concerned, that's what this guy sounded like to me, like this Tea Party jackass. And that's where we're at in this country. Nobody's listening to anybody. I don't want to get into a big discussion about it. You're right, you know.
And that's what you get for going on Facebook. You talk about the land of the lost.
Yeah, man, Facebook, man, that's bad over there, real bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't go on a Facebook for $1 million.
You don't have a Facebook page, do you?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Because it's for idiots. I'm not going to go over there. I'd rather be on Twitter and everything.
You only have to do 140 characters.
Yeah, Twitter's better because I don't have to write that much. Plus, on Facebook, you got to put pictures up and stuff.
So it's too much trouble.
Yeah.
Well, I have the Facebook Margaret Gray fan page, and for all the good it does, I might as well take it down. I've got 414 fans on that ridiculous ass page. I'd like to put my foot through the...
What are you getting all pissed off about?
Well, I'm over there posting. You know that we did the gospel set over at Hell on Earth, right?
Yeah.
Were you not making a comment?
I'm not going to make any comment about these sets you do on the weekend. You're over there at Hell on Earth, and then you were over at the Ham Hock, and you're at some other place. I've never heard of these places. You're complaining about Frank booking you into these dumps, right?
Yes, I'm complaining about Frank booking me into these dumps. I took that song by the Cow Sills, as you know, and I gave it a reworking of Vampire Feel, and everyone thought it sounded like garbage, so I gave up on that. I can't make anyone happy.
Hey, look, Margaret, do you want to have a singing career, or don't you?
Of course I don't. I like singing.
All right, then don't let Frank book you into these dumps. The Ham Hock. And then you got your road manager rolled.
I didn't get him rolled.
Well, he got rolled for the cash receipts or something?
Yes. And then I said to the owner of this toilet that we were playing, this was last weekend, this hell on earth.
Yeah.
I said to the guy, my husband will be in touch with you, and he doesn't play.
Oh, brother.
Well, he don't play, huh?
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah, but Frank is Frank can't be threatening to blow people's cars up, because that's what he did, didn't he?
No comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he did. He threatened to get a shoebox in the guy's car.
No comment.
Well, then don't bring it up. You talking about that guy he knows in Canada?
Phil, do you want to get me blown up?
Well, then what is it with you? You can't be throwing that stuff around. And Frank, he's a lawyer. He's going to get in trouble.
Well, don't worry about it. Frenchie from Montreal will take care of things.
Frenchie from Montreal.
Oh, well, laugh it up, Phil.
Well, hey, I didn't do anything with the guy. I'll tell you something. If I were you, I wouldn't be throwing around anybody's name like that, okay? And especially going to some club. These guys that run clubs, they're not a bunch of wilting violets. These guys are, if the guy's ripping you off, I'd go to the cops. I wouldn't be going to Frank and have him call up some friend of his in Montreal.
Don't worry about it. We've got it under control. Frenchie's got it under control.
Frenchie's got it under control. Speaking of Frenchie, man, when I was doing my little dissertation there on Saturday, I was talking about the Civil War, Lincoln Commission and everything. And I had been reading in this Lincoln report and the commission report that looked into his assassination, and I was looking at the transcripts and everything. And my God, when they were talking, they start the witness list out with a bunch of Southerners, because what they're trying to establish in this commission transcript, they're trying to establish, well, okay, let's see, do you know John Wilkes Booth? What did you know about him? Did you know this person, that person? Were you in Washington? All of these guys, to a man, had been up to Canada multiple times.
Well, yes, but they weren't the only ones, Phil. There was a lot of travel going to Canada during the Civil War, from Northerners as well.
Well, the Northern guys that were going up there, look, the Confederates were in Canada to plot war strategy, war operations, different operations by what was called the Confederate Secret Service, which was not really an official organization so much as it was a loosely confederated, if you'll pardon your redundancy there, loosely confederated group of individuals working on behalf of the South. And there was a whole bunch of stuff they were doing. They were plotting border raids. They were plotting bombings. They were plotting the kidnapping of Lincoln. I mean, it was something well known to the Southern spies that Booth had proposed this. But they're all doing it in Montreal, Toronto, and places like that, you know. Now, the Northern guys that were up there were federal spies spying on them, you know.
Now, you know, they went up there plotting to blow the South up.
What?
Why are they going to do that?
The South's up there plotting to blow up the North.
What has the North got to go up there for? The North can stay where the North is. They don't have to go to Canada to do that.
Why doesn't the South stay where the South is?
Because the South is down south, man. They want to be up north, above the North.
They wanted to be north of the North so that the South, right?
Wait a minute. What I'm saying, Bud, is that the Confederates were in Canada because that gave them access to the northern states, right over the border. You understand?
Yeah. But how come the North was up there?
Because they're spying on them, man.
That's what I'm saying. They can't blow the South up.
Why do they want to go to Canada to blow the South up? The South is right there. All I got to do is step over the border. They're in the South, right?
What? You don't even know what you're talking about.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
You're talking to an idiot, Phil.
No, wait. Hold on for a minute. Forget it. Never mind.
You're saying that the North can go to the North?
What? The North can go to the North? Bud, I'm saying, you know exactly what I'm saying, and you're playing stupid.
Yeah, he is, man. He told me one time he did it on purpose.
I did it on purpose one time, not this time.
Are you really trying to tell me that you can't figure out why the North was in Canada? They're not going to blow the South up from the North. They don't need to, man. But the South can be in the North so that the North... I'm going to kick your ass. All right, we're going to be right back here in the world. Anyway, well, you understand what I was saying.
No, I don't understand. When you say the federal spy, I know that. But you said other Northerners were there.
Yeah, there were doctors. There was one guy that testified who was a doctor. He was going between New York State and Windsor, or he was going between one of the northern states and Canada. He was a doctor. And some of his patients and clients were Canadians. And so he was going between the U.S. and Canada. And while he was there, he, like so many private citizens before and since, was contacted by the United States government and said, "Sir, you're a citizen of the U.S. We were wondering if you wouldn't mind." And he said, "Certainly, anything for my country." And he, you know, he, all you do is you just take note of certain people. The U.S. government does it today. The U.S. government will talk to business people that are traveling. "Would you mind this, that, or something else?" Or they may be contacted by private citizens to say, "I'm traveling here, I'm traveling there. I'd be happy to be of service to my country somehow." And sometimes it's as simple as taking note of a name on a package, or where a package is being mailed to, or where a package is being mailed from, or what business a certain company is having with another company, what country that company is in. That's stuff that is very easily ascertained. You don't have to have some deep cover agent doing it. You can have just a private citizen operating as the eyes and ears for you. All right, folks. So that's my small little itsy bitsy, small kind of a, you know, whatever bit of news there here on the Phil Hendry Show. My reading there of the whole whatever the hell it is, the Confederate effort. All right, we'll be back with more here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. It's kind of a lazy Tuesday night, you know, the election, to hell with it. Ah, screw it. No matter who the president is, we will survive. World famous Phil Hendry Show. All right. World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. All right. So do you know how to do that?
Yeah, I can get it.
Got to set up a conference call. I asked Matt about it. I have to do a conference call next week for business. We all get together and discuss, you know.
Really? And these conference calls are with who?
Well, different people across the country, you know, sales and so on and so forth, doing it from the car, that kind of thing.
You got all set up in your car and stuff. That's pretty, you know, kind of rich, isn't it?
No, it ain't rich. What do you mean rich?
Well, are you doing conference calls from your car?
Yeah, I'm talking on them.
Well, how do you do that?
What do you mean, how do I do that?
It's against the law to use your phone.
It's against the law to have your hands on a phone, man. You got to have a hands-free phone.
But you don't have a Bluetooth.
No, I use the speaker in the car.
That's what I mean. You've got one of those rich guy setups.
Yeah.
That ain't a rich guy setup. Come on.
That Frank has that. He sits in the car and acts like he's a big shot, going, "Well, this and that and this and that."
No, it ain't no rich guy setup. It's a feature of the car. It's a feature of the car. And believe me, it took me forever to figure it out, because I'm not that bright to begin with when it comes to that kind of stuff. Pairing the phone up with this and that and something else. No, it's a feature of the car. It's something that I use. And, yeah, I can drive down the road. As a matter of fact, it's the best time for me to be talking on a phone while I'm driving. And I'm not using my hands, and I'm not texting, and I'm not doing any of that stuff. So I'm zipping down the road, and I'm paying attention to things. And I'm also getting some work done, you know. But I'm just trying to figure out how I can do it, because I got to start setting them up myself. And I always used to think you had to have some major corporate account, and Matt was just telling me it doesn't take anything.
Yeah, you can probably call up a different phone company and stuff.
And let me ask you a question, man. Were you using my phone?
Maybe.
Because I had a $300 bill that was overdue.
Oh, my God. You were on his phone.
No.
I lent you my phone that one day, man. I don't know what you were doing. What were you doing? You're not on Facebook.
He's texting back and forth his girlfriend. Shut up.
Yep, that's what you're doing. Do you understand that those texts cost money, man? Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Do you know that you saw that message that came in? You're over your text limit.
I thought you had a special plan.
I ain't got no special plan, man, that's going to be letting you text forever and a day. And I get the bill, it's overdue, $337. What the hell are you doing, man?
Well, when we went down to, well...
When you went down to what, Miami? When you were down in Miami that time? You know that costs money? You know, when I was down in the Caribbean, and I was trying to update our page. I was trying to update the website, and I'm in the Caribbean. That's a lot of bread. And AT&T, let me just say, you ain't kidding anybody, man, you know. I just don't have the time right now to change my plan, but when I do, I'm going over to Verizon big time. I'm done with you. I'm finished, because you guys with the plan this and the plan that, and you can save money here and save money there. Today, more than ever before, especially when you're doing a job like mine, I can't afford what you guys are doing. And you cats don't get it, man. Everybody is working now. Everyone is working using their phones. Everyone's working using their homes. Everyone's working using their cars. It's everything is an office now. And you jackasses with this plan and that plan, why don't you just figure this one out? Everything is business. You know.
Well, did you get that business line on the internet or not?
No, I'm not going to get a business line on the internet. I'm not going to spend $1,500 a month because Time Warner Cable has found another way to make money. Those guys they're beautiful, man. I mean, when you really know when a company has you by the you-know-whats and you got no options, man, they give you that big toothy grin on the one hand, and on the other hand, they just got their hands shoved deep in your pocket. And Time Warner, enjoy better. Yeah.
You really, that guy bugs you, doesn't he? I've seen you grit your teeth when that guy comes on TV and he goes, enjoy better.
Yeah, well, guy, I want to kick his ass.
Yeah, I do too, unfortunately. I really do. I hate that guy's voice.
Well, he's all trying to act like he's all special and stuff.
I think he's very sexy.
Oh, is that right? Enjoy better. All I'm telling you is that, you know, when we had the internet outage that one night, and we did not have our ability to do our video cast, I'm getting a whole bunch of this double talk from these cats, and I'm saying, look it, man, all you got to do is I know what we have to replace. We got to replace a modem. We probably have to replace a router. We may even need a hub. We may need to, you know, a whole bunch of technical stuff, guys, that you don't need to understand. And this guy's saying, well, you know, Mr. Henry, you can have the guys come to the office and they can set up the this and the that and the business, and they wear a really special shirt and they wear a fright wig. And
fright wig?
Well, the guy's talking like they have a special uniform, and they arrive in a van and they wear latex gloves with sunglasses, and they come in and they leave like they're in the Matrix or something, like that guy, you know, Mr. Anderson.
You're kidding me.
Yes, I'm kidding, but that's what it sounded like. And I said, no, I don't think I need that, man. You know, all I need is for this to work, you know. Don't give me this, you know, well, if it's a bit... I said, look at Jack, you know, and with all due respect, I know that there are homes out there of families, people, you know, lots of folks in a house. They're using the internet, and they're doing just fine. I don't demand anything of the internet service that I have that's all that special. I don't demand any, you know, we're not over-encumbering the service. You know, I'm not morning, noon, and night on a desktop. Most of the crap that I'm doing is Wi-Fi. So, you know, I screamed at the guy. He started crying, and he left. And, you know, he didn't cry.
Yeah, that'd be funny if he started to cry, though.
No, he didn't. But then I went out behind the office, and he said to me, well, we did have to replace some hardware. I said, I understand that. And he says, you know, you're down, because we're close to the ocean here, and we do have rust and all kinds of crap, you know. Now, I went out behind the building, and I noticed that there is a particular kind of plant. You had the name of it, Margaret, the one with the blue flower.
I forget the name of it. It's a very lovely plant, but it does. It's a creeping vine, like ivy, and so it creeps along, and it wraps itself around some of those wires.
Yes, exactly. And I saw that, and I said, you know, this is probably half of our problem, man, because this creeping vine is going to creep all the way up there, and it gives me the creeps. So I'm going to bring in a whole crew of guys that are fresh out of prison and just can't wait to get their hands on machetes and stuff and let them go at it and just cut all that stuff away.
You can't fill that. It's a very beautiful vine. Your neighbors will be upset.
Well, that's just too bad.
You don't care if they get upset. We got a business to run.
That is a very beautiful plant.
I don't care if it's beautiful. It's killing me. It's strangling the thing.
What thing?
You know, you saw that, man. It's wrapping itself around these... It's wrapping itself around at least one or two of those lines up there. I know that they're probably just electrical utility lines of some kind. They maybe have nothing to do with the cable service or the internet service. I just don't like it. I just don't want to see that. That's all I need, man. The guy's going to come out here one day and say, oh, well, no wonder you've got that plant that has strangled the life out of every utility coming into this house, and now it's coming for you, Mr. Henry. And I'm even starting to lisp a little bit, sir, because, you know, it's wrapping itself around my tongue. Like that.
You know, so, you know what I think your problem is? I think you're overworked. I think your mind is coming unglued.
Yeah, you're coming unmoored.
I'm coming unmoored. Anyway, so, but you know what, man? It's a great place to work, I'll tell you that. And it's been windy and cold and woo! Yeah.
Man, I noticed the other night it was freezing ass cold in here.
Really cold. And I'm welcoming that because it used to be in the summer months it gets hotter than hell in here. But it has been cold, and it's getting colder. It's a beautiful thing, man. I dig it. All right. World-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. Now, at the end of January, the Sketch Fest in San Francisco, I want you to write that down. Drunk History and Comedy Central, I want you to write that down. IFC in January, I want you to write that down. And we'll be doing more Saturday bonus shows, History and Tequila. I want you to write that down. And then we want you to write down this. We want you to write down our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/PhilHenryFans, PHANS, and twitter.com/RealPhilHenry. I say every day
when the sun is the Phil Henry down. Show is going to be back, maybe. You remember when your baby left this town?
World famous Phil Henry Show here, back in studio at the El Pacifico. And we started the show here with a story that I'm going to revisit just briefly. And I want to find out. I'm going to stay on this, man, because I want to find out.
It is very weird.
It's weird, all right. And we were just talking about history and my love of history. If we're going to do some more of those Saturday shows.
Well, why do you have to be drunk when you do them?
You know why? I'll tell you why. Because I believe, first of all, I think drunk history, that's a great idea. But secondly, I think that it's a good example for people to see a man having drinks and speaking in a lucid manner about something. See, I'm slamming those tequila. I'm not slamming the shots. I'm having tequila shots, and I'm having beers. Now, that's a nice drink, you know?
Man, bro, that are you kidding, man? That's hardcore.
What's hardcore about that? You have a nice drink of tequila, you have a beer. I'm not slamming them down, man, one after the other. Only a jackass does that. You understand? Guys that drink like that are jackass. They can't drink. They don't know how to drink. And they wind up on their back, throwing up into their girlfriend's purse, and they think they ain't drinking. So, first of all, I think it's good to set an example that, yes, a guy can sit down, have himself an Añejo and a Utica Club, which somebody tweeted me the other day, Utica Club, man, that's skunk beer. Well, wait a second. You're talking to me about skunk beer? This is a country that drinks Budweiser. Budweiser. Hello?
What's wrong with Budweiser? That's good beer.
Oh, okay.
Well, what are you saying? You're saying it isn't?
I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying, where does anybody get off calling anything skunk when the number one beer in this country is Budweiser? Don't give me anything about Budweiser's fine. Budweiser is not top-of-the-line beer. I don't care what anybody tells you. It's good old-fashioned, regular, run-of-the-mill, assembly-line lager. It ain't nothing that to write home about. I say that with all due respect. If they're a sponsor, I take it all back, but I doubt that they are.
Hey.
Thank you. Now, so that's what I'm having, you know, and that's number one. Number two, one of the things we were talking about was World War II, and this is a story that's really important, man, because it has to do with art. It has to do with art that was stolen. This is the last vestige. If World War II is ever really going to leave us, and it's taken its sweet time, I'll tell you that, because there's always something coming up, something turning up that Adolf did that we got to figure out and we got to deal with. And here's a new one. This is some guy, these Germans, I'm not saying the Germans themselves, I'm saying the old generation of Germans, boy, they got a pair on them. I don't know where they get off with some of the chutzpah that they got. This is some old creep who was the son of the guy that was in charge of confiscating this art and selling it off to make money for the Reich. Cornelius Gerlet is the son of a man by the name of Gerlet, obviously, and he had a really Hildebrand Gerlet. This is the guy's name, Hildebrand. And Hildebrand was the guy that was in charge of getting rid of this degenerate art. He was supposed to sell it, so he had to confiscate this art and then sell it off. And obviously the money goes to the Third Reich. Now, one of the a secondary story here, and one of the really amazing bits of convenient moral blindness that the Nazis practiced, was that Mr. Gerlitt, Mr. Hildebrand Gerlitt, was in part Jewish. It's also true that one of the decorated field marshals of World War II, one of the guys that helped build the German Air Force, was Jewish. Field Marshal Milch was his name. But the Nazis just kind of overlooked this stuff. If this guy was good, it's okay. Well, you know, he's Jewish. Well, you know, that's okay. Well, wait a minute. I mean, we can now. Never mind. Okay, the Führer signed off on it. It's all good, man. So this guy's a Jewish guy, and his job was to. He was a well-known art dealer. He was commissioned by the Nazis to rid German museums and galleries of degenerate art. He was also the father of the elderly Munich man in whose home the works were reportedly discovered. The son Cornelius Gerlitt. How about them apples?
This guy got a hold of the dad's stuff.
Exactly. His father, as it turns out, wasn't selling off all of this stuff. His father, as it turns out, was holding on to it. Now, it's quite possible that the father was holding on to some of this stuff so that it would not get sold off and just disseminated and spread throughout the world and we'd never find it again. Maybe he was trying to, in his own way, protect it. But he sure didn't when it came to Junior, because Junior took this stuff, $1.4 billion worth. $1.4 billion. Do you understand? That's amazing to me.
Well, I mean, Phil, there are billionaires.
Yeah, but it ain't just laying around the house. It ain't laying around the house. This is laying around the house. This guy...
Are you telling me this was in the apartment?
What do you think I've been talking about?
Yeah, it's in the apartment. That's where they raided in and found it.
Yeah, man, they all stacked on top of each other and stuff.
You know, I mean, the cops in Bavaria, in Munich, busted down the door and went in, Gestapo style. I'm kidding. Just whatever. And they found this $1.4 billion worth of stuff stacked up in the apartment. So if Daddy gave it to the son to, you know, like, you know, Cornelius, I now pass this on to you for you to protect. Well, what's the point? You don't need to protect it anymore, man. We won the war, and the rightful owners should get it back, and the museum should get it back, and the whole world can now go back to the business of enjoying this wonderful art without having a bunch of Nazis, you know? But they didn't do that. This guy has it in the thing. Now, here's the thing that really blows me away. This happened 2 years ago. This old man, Cornelius Gerlitt, has not been so much as charged with anything. He hasn't even, I don't even think they've taken a fingerprint. I don't think they've even asked him what toothpaste he uses. Nothing. This guy was, he walked right out of the police station. He cannot be reached for comment. German authorities have remained tight-lipped on certain aspects of the case. What's going on?
Well, it might have to do with national interests, some national security. It may not be any of our beeswax.
Hey, I got news for you, Margaret. This was a world war, so it's everybody's business. It's everybody's business. This was a war that involved the world. You know, everybody was involved. Everybody got killed. Everybody got shot at. Everybody put their ass on the line, so everybody gets to know. Germany's business. Let me tell you something, man. And a lot of this stuff isn't from Germany. It's French, it's Italian, it's Russian, so on. So he stored the collection of works in his Munich apartment for decades, according to Stern magazine. Mr. Gerlitt couldn't be reached for comment. The German authorities declined to provide an estimated value of the trove and didn't confirm the name of the person under investigation for suspected tax evasion. But I saw the figure put at $1.4 billion for some of this stuff, because it's very, very valuable stuff. Mr. Nemitz, who is the prosecutor for the Bavarian authorities, said that although the suspect had been present when the apartment was searched, his whereabouts were unknown. The investigation is continuing, and so far there have been no grounds for an arrest warrant. How did they figure that? Under Germany's strict privacy laws, authorities are prohibited from disclosing the details of tax investigations. The state prosecutor in Augsburg, a small city near Munich, is responsible for investigating white-collar crime. The authorities haven't established the provenance of many of the artworks. Provenance means the actual validity. Is it, in point of fact, what they think it is? In other words, is that an Otto Dix or is it a fake?
What do you mean a fake?
There's a lot of money in fake pieces of... You didn't know that?
Uh-uh. What do you mean, fake?
He just asked that. He's going to tell...
Hold on. Fake, there are people that can duplicate works of art right down to the brushstroke. I mean, they can duplicate it. And then they can take that piece of art and they can say to you, I have an actual, like, you know, a Da Vinci. And if you'd like to buy it, and you, unless you're you have a really critical eye, you may buy that thing for a lot of money. It's like counterfeit money. It's like passing counterfeit money, you know.
Well, how do they figure it out?
There are guys, there are art critics, and there are art specialists who have absolutely solid gold eyes when it comes to this kind of thing. They can detect whether something's a fake or not. And they are, along with a whole network of people like this around the world, can determine the provenance, that is, the history and the validity of a painting. There's a really cool documentary called Who the Blankety Blank is Jackson Pollock. There was a woman, now get a load of this, her friend bought a painting at a garage sale. And her friend gave it to her. She said, well, this is a nice painting, and I think this would look good, and I don't know, maybe it was a housewarming party or something.
Her friend bought her a painting at a garage sale and gave it to her and let her know that she got it at a garage sale.
I don't know if she let her know, but the thing of it was is she had this painting, and somebody, I don't know who, said, wait, what is that? I think the lady brought it in, and she wanted to sell it. He said, do you know that that's probably a Jackson Pollock? She said, who the hell is he? She never even heard of the guy. He said, well, he was a very famous painter. And she said, you're kidding. No, I think you need to have that appraised. So began this project that this woman undertook to have the provenance of this painting determined. And they couldn't figure it out. They couldn't figure it out for absolute sure whether it was a Jackson Pollock or not. They brought in a guy that analyzed the paint. They brought in a guy that went into Jackson Pollock's studio and chipped up some of the paint from the floor and then compared it to the chemical composition of the paint on that painting, and he was absolutely sure that that's a Jackson Pollock. And then another guy came in and looked at the brush strokes and compared those against like 90 million other Jackson Pollock paint. Well, yeah, that's it. And another guy came. I'm telling you, man. And then they brought it to another guy. He said, absolutely not. It's not a Jackson Pollock. I have a solid gold eye. There's no way. And another guy said, yes, there is.
Well, how did this movie end? Was it proven?
No, the movie ends with it unproven. And here's what happened. The lady got into business with a guy who's an art dealer. And this guy had been in prison for doing some bum deals. Now he's out and he's trying to reestablish himself. And he can't get reestablished because he has this... I'm telling you, it's the goofiest thing he ever saw. He's got this prison background. But he says, I want to take on her painting because I want to prove it's a Jackson Pollock. And I can't definitely, but I want to put together a syndicate of people that will invest in this because I'm sure that at some point we will prove it is. In other words, what he was asking people to do was to invest money on the hope, on the percentages that it's a Jackson Pollock. But he wasn't successful doing it.
Oh, I remember you talked about, and the people looked at him like he just crawled out from under a rock.
Well, they didn't look at him that way.
Man, I'd give him money for that.
Well, no, they didn't look at him like that, but they were saying, well, now, wait a minute, pal. He said, no, gentlemen, you're right. We don't absolutely know, but I can tell you, based upon my experience and the millions and the people that we've had, and he listed the names of the guys that had looked at it, this is a Jackson Pollock. I know that we're going to prove at some point in the future it is, and I'm asking you to invest as a syndicate in this painting. And now it's in a warehouse in New York City, air conditioned, being kept, you know, pristine. But I don't know if they've ever proved it yet.
Well, that sounds like a lot of work to do for a painting that you're not really sure. But why would it just be out there in the world?
Well, apparently Jackson Pollock used to use his paintings, trade his paintings, give away his paintings. I mean, he did a lot. In the movie, it even shows him trading a painting for a case of beer, I think, at one point. So it wasn't anything that was unusual for him to give his paintings away sometimes to people and or use them as some kind of currency for things that he would need, you know.
Like what? Like a beer and stuff?
Yeah, like a case of beer one time or...
Carton of eggs?
A carton of eggs? Maybe a carton of eggs.
But probably like gum?
Yeah, chewing gum. I don't know, man. Just stuff. All right, we'll be right back. It's the Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I just saw that tweet from Johnny Bean about when he started smoking.
Yeah, it said $1.23 a pack. You kidding me or something?
You ain't going to believe when I started smoking. I started smoking, and this is bad. I started smoking cigarettes when I was 14. I quit, as you well know, going on four years ago. 35 cents a pack.
What are you talking about, man? That's like back in the olden days, man.
Yeah, it was back in the olden days. It was 1967. I was 14 years old. And cigarettes were 35 cents a pack.
Well, that is, when you think about that, that's nuts. But you could go a long way on $5, $10 in those days.
Yeah, I remember hitchhiking to San Francisco when I was like 18.
Did what?
I hitchhiked to San Francisco. I thumbed. I got out on the road and I hitchhiked. It's something we used to do. We don't do it anymore, and I don't blame kids for not doing it anymore because it's dangerous as hell, and I'm lucky to be alive, okay? Now, having said that, can I get to the...
Yeah. Can't believe you hitchhiked.
I did. I hitchhiked to San Francisco one time, and I borrowed $10 from the dad of a friend of mine. I said, can I borrow $10? He says, yeah. $10 got me with a whole week. I was solid for a week on
$10. $10? Can you imagine that now? That doesn't pay for tap water.
Yeah, I mean, $10 today wouldn't go anywhere, but $10 is all I needed. I hitchhiked to San Francisco. I don't know what the hell I ate or what, but, you know, that was my thing. The reason why I hitchhiked around, because I thought I was going to be Jack London or something. I was, you know, writing a journal and thumbing places and doing all of that.
So you're like going to be a beatnik or something.
Yeah, I was going to be a beatnik, smoking my 35-cent pack of cigarettes. And, you know, and I think back then, man, you could get a bottle of wine for 70 cents, you know.
But what, hey, did you go and get a bath for a nickel, like in a Clint Eastwood movie and stuff?
It ain't the 19th century, man, okay? Stuff was cheaper. What the hell do you want me to tell you? You know, I will tell you one thing. I mean, I went to London. I was in Europe in the 80s, and I saw gas prices in Europe, what we're paying right now, like $4 or $5 a gallon, right? Back then it was, I don't know, whatever, £3 for a gallon of gasoline. And it was, everybody made fun of that then. Everybody was looking at the gas prices over there saying, you got to be putting me on, man. How in the hell could you possibly afford it? Well, guess what, man? We're paying it now. You know, those guys in Europe in so many ways have kind of, I don't know what you call it. I mean, they've been through things that we're just now going through in terms of the economics. You know, they got a lot of motorcycles and mopeds and what are those things called?
Oh, the chutzpahs.
Yeah, the chutzpah.
What's a chutzpah?
It's that little motorcycle.
No, it ain't a chutzpah. Whatever it is.
No, that ain't a hood. God, Phil, you get all, your face gets all scrunched up.
Well, that ain't what it's called. It's called something else. But, yeah, they're on the two-wheelers over there now, man, because that's, you know, obviously it saves on the gasoline. But, you know, the price of stuff goes up. What do you want me to tell you? You know, it just is. I can, and 35 cents for a pack of cigarettes. Now it's like, what, $5, $6, $7 in New York City, in Manhattan. And just so you know, I quit smoking because I got pneumonia and I went in the hospital. It wasn't the price. That didn't do diddly squat. If I still smoked, I'd still be smoking. I don't give a damn if it's $8 a carton, man. You know, or $8 a pack. And it wasn't about the cancer ads.
None of that stuff got to you like getting cancer?
No, none of that. Didn't bother me at all. Not even the outlawing it in, you know, you can't smoke here and you can't smoke there and you can't smoke somewhere else. None of that stuff, because you're going to find a place to smoke. Big wow. It was, for me, it was winding up in a hospital and almost croaking. That's what did it. Okay, guys, anything you want to finish up with, Margaret?
Well, I just want people to know that I am going to be publishing a comprehensive set list of the music that we have been doing. And the song that I wanted everyone to know, because it was misunderstood. The song is called North Wind Blow Bob's Love to Me.
What?
I'm not talking to you, bud.
What is it called?
It's called North Wind, parentheses, Blow Bob's Love to Me. What are you looking at? If you laugh, damn you.
Well, why can't I laugh at that?
It's a beautiful song. It was written by Withby Booth, and it's a lovely song. I'm going to be doing it this weekend.
North Wind, Blow Bob's Love to Me.
You know, you're the only guy I know, Phil, that can take the title of a beautiful love song and turn it into filth within seconds.
Look, I didn't name it North Wind, Blow Bob's Love to Me, all right?
And what makes you think that's such a bad name?
It sounds ridiculous, that's all. But in any event, you're going to be doing that song...
I'll be doing that as a part of the set that we're going to be doing this weekend, yes.
Where are you going to be?
I don't know yet, but Frank's going to book me into another...
Well, you know what? I mean, all you can do is hope and pray, you know, that it isn't the same experience that it was. Maybe it ought to be... Maybe he ought to just start spending the money and produce these things himself. I don't know. So that'll be a set list of all of the songs up to this point.
Yes. Everything we've done up to this point... We will be publishing a master set list on there. I just wanted people to know that North Wind, Blow Bob... I'm going to kick your...
Hey, watch it.
I told you it's not dirty.
Then what?
You can't blame the guy for laughing at it. North Wind, Blow Bob's Love to Me.
Well, if you say it like that, Phil...
And what was that other song that I saw something about, I love it, I'm deeply in love with it? What the hell, why wouldn't I think that's dirty?
Why is that dirty?
I'm deeply in love with it.
Yes.
What are you deeply in love with?
It's not about me.
But you're singing the song.
Yes, I'm playing the part of the character.
Okay, so what is the character singing about?
The character is singing about being in love with it.
In love with it. That's what I'm trying to figure out here.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll see you guys tomorrow night, 7 o'clock on the El Pacifico and 10 o'clock on the Eastern Coastio. And that's standard time, booby. See you then.
Later.